Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, Redcasters, be sure to subscribe to our channel and ring the bell to be notified about our latest videos. Go Big Red.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, the Husker Fan Sports Show.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast. I'm your host, David Gaspers, and I'm with Redcast Rob.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be back tonight. And let me tell you, after watching tonight's basketball game against Ohio State, I am standing at full mast.
Oh, Robert, I expected that from you. Also with Boomer.
I'm just excited to see Harbaugh in possible negotiation with the Chargers so he can quietly get out of Michigan just ahead of any sanctions. So good plan there, Jim.
Hey, you know what? He delivered the national title to him, so it's
and nobody could ever take that away from him. Yeah, except the NCAA.
Right,
you're
right.
Except the NCAA.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but does that really count? You know,
I mean,
come on.
Imagine having 270 years and both of them have asterisks next to them. That is terrible for Michigan. I just feel so bad.
Yeah, the split championship asterisk is fine. I don't care. They would have lost to us in 97, but hey, that's a whole nother story.
We would have mopped the floor with them in 97, let's be honest. They were scared to play us.
Tradition.
We'll talk football here in a little bit, maybe mostly looking forward. We'll talk a little bit about coaching changes and the Polynesian Bowl and what to look forward to with spring ball coming up and maybe a few other things, right, Boomer? But before we get there, I think the first topic of the night should be Nebraska ball. And Fred Hoiberg is getting this team to a record that we haven't seen in quite some time. 15-5 now, right, Boomer? 5-4
yes,
in conference?
Yes, that's correct. Yep, 15-5. Yep.
And, hey, you know, they are struggling on the road, and we throw some stats out for you here a little bit later on how tough it is to win on the road in the Big Ten. But they sure look good inside the vault. And after beating Northwestern over the weekend, and that was celebrating Danny Nee, maybe we'll talk a little bit about our favorite Danny Nee memories, at least me and Boomer anyway. We took down Northwestern and then really handled Ohio State after a slow start. Boomer, what are your thoughts of where Nebraska basketball is headed right now?
Well, I mean, these were a couple of big wins, you know, these last two games, you know, especially kind of coming off some disappointing performances against Iowa and then that big letdown at Rutgers where we thought we had a good chance at a road win. You know, you kind of felt like you'd let a lot of momentum slip away. And then you finally get back to home where they're a completely different team at home, it seems. But then so is the rest of the Big Ten, it sounds like. You know, Dave will take us into those numbers later. But then, you know, you get a nice win against a scrappy Northwestern team and really kind of, you know, held them out of there.
Slated to be in the tournament right now.
Exactly.
You know?
Yep. So that's not a bad Northwestern team by any stretch. And then, then this game against Ohio State's kind of the thing I really wanted to see out of a Nebraska ball team, you know, lately, because, you know, you had those games against, you know, Minnesota and Rutgers where you let big leads slip away because you just fall asleep for 10 minutes and just stop playing basketball and just start turning the ball over. And you let a team that you're, you know, we had, what, two double-digit leads against Rutgers, I think, at various points in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those huge scoring droughts and let those slip away. You know, and this was a game where we had a nice, you know, we built some nice leads up. And, you know, whenever Ohio State would try to, you know, claw back, especially in that second half, we didn't let them. I think the closest they got was within 3 points in that second half, and that was early. So it was nice to see Nebraska take charge of a game, build a lead, and actually keep it, you know, didn't have those long scoring droughts. You know, you're not going to score every possession, but you can't have those huge, you know, essentially half a half, you know, go without making a field goal. Because even if you're playing halfway decent defense, that's going to catch up to you. And this time they didn't. So that's really what I wanted to see. They built that nice lead at the end, and they basically kept it at double digits for, you know, a huge chunk at the end of that game. So even when Ohio State was starting to hit threes at the end.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure.
So that's what you needed. So.
Yeah, I'm sure Fred will talk a little bit about how they need to keep their defensive intensity up there. Ohio State brought someone off the bench there that finally found the stroke and hit it several threes there, which kept the game even reasonably close. Rob, you have to be pleased with Rink Mass, though, right? I mean, 34-10, 6-8 from three, and a slow start for the whole team, really. So, I mean, they really broke out there in the end of the second half.
Yeah, after starting, I think, was 3 from 13, because this team depends on the three. Figured that out.
50% of their shots are from the three. Right?
And they were 3 of 13 from 3-point to start the game. And after that start, they were 11 of 14. So quick math, they were something like 52%. I think they were, 14 of 29 from three for the game. I'm not even looking at the stats. I'm remembering this because I was listening to the radio broadcast, because I've got this new tradition now where it just stresses me out watching those games on TV. Refs are just so terrible. I'm like, I can't watch this. So I've been watching the first half or doing whatever, and then I go to the gym and I work out throughout the entire second half listening to the game. And so the last two times I've done that, they've won. So I will continue to do that for
all. There you go.
But yeah, it's exciting. It's funny because I love how well they're shooting. How well Mast is taking over the games in the middle like that. And there are times when he has been outmatched in there, but it's the Big Ten and you're going to see that. But for me, the biggest thing is just how well they're hitting their free throws. I think as a team, I heard the other day, they're like 79% as a team, which is kind of unheard of in a lot of ways. I don't know what the stats are now. I remember Pavelka talking something about that at the during the Northwestern game the other day.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some incredible number as a team shooting free throws this season, which is
I'll let Boomer look that up. And
yeah, I'm letting him look it up too, because I think that I heard that correctly. I may be wrong. It could have been the Arizona game, because I'm always mixing up my teams. I watched three games on Sunday, and one of them even included Northern Colorado, and they they're playing
really talking about Husker basketball.
We are Husker basketball, but I'm just saying that it's hitting free throws is a huge thing for us.
Yeah, we're currently 75.7% from free throw. It's good for 49th in that country. So just slots behind.
We get to the line quite a bit too, right? Yep. I think I just saw us that we're the top four in the Big Ten with that. So
yes. So I was close. Look at that. Yeah. I'm not even looking at stats tonight or anything. So
just to back this up a little bit, I mean, all the rightful criticisms of the Fred Hoiberg era over the first three and a half years was that, this whole pace and space thought process, and we're going to have great 3-point shooters. It never worked. Right. And we really couldn't wrap our head around why it wasn't working. And we kind of laid the Big Ten and look, this is too physical a conference. You can't do that. All that type of stuff. Fred went back to the drawing board, changed some key staff positions and recruiting philosophy. And he's found players that can shoot the three, like Rink Mast, and also got Kamenaga, but also developed a guy like CJ Welcher over multiple years that faced a lot of criticism from fans. And it's turned into really good 3-point shooters. And it's a really good 3-point shooting team, especially at home. And they learned how to play Big Ten defense, and they also instilled that by bringing some key transfers in, like a Jaw and Gary and even his son, right? And Sam Hoiberg is up. I mean, we were struggling there in the early parts of the first half, and Sam Hoiberg comes in and raises up the defensive intensity, and that translates to some better offensive movement, and there we started making some shots. So that's a good formula.
It's crazy. Tominaga got two quick fouls kind of in the first half and was out on the bench, and it almost was like, one thing that I saw tonight too, and that I saw on Sunday. And that I saw on Sunday as well, is that, Tominaga is more of a second half guy really anyway. So when Hoiberg comes in, there's always seems to be like a really big And it seems like he just comes in with this intensity and this hustle. And a lot of times coaches get blasted for playing their sons on their teams, right? And, you know, Hoiberg is, I believe, the exception here where, you know, you have to be excited for what he's doing out there as a walk-on, just coming on, putting up the numbers that he puts on. And sometimes, you know, it doesn't show up on the stats, but you go, if you watch the team and you know what you're talking about, I mean, he is a spark plug for this offense a lot of times because he's pulling down rebounds. He's making the passes. He's taking that extra effort to get the ball back when it's on the floor. You know, he's the kind of guy that like gets up and he probably, you know, he doesn't quite look like, you know, Mass does after a game where he looks like he got mauled by a big cat. But I mean, and then you combine that where like all of a sudden, you know, guys are like collapsing on guys like Hoiberg, because even after he got blocked, there was one play that I think where the momentum really changed, and Hoiberg came in the game and he drove to the hoop and just got blocked. I mean, swatted. It was the kind of stuff where like on the playground, he probably would have got like shoved to the ground, yelled at, the guy would have stood over him, that kind of block. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Very next time he had the ball, what did he do? He went straight to the hoop, straight at the same guy and drew a foul on that guy. Right. And a lot of players just don't have the gumption to do anything like that in that sort of behavior. But the other part too was that it started opening up because he would drive the ball so much, started opening the outside, and guys like Bryce Williams, I mean, God, don't let him get hot too, because then you've got three guys out there. You got Mast, Williams, you got Wiltshire, and then God forbid Tominaga gets hot. I mean, that are four guys right there. And when we're winning, that's what's happening. And it's beautiful. It's so nice to watch.
Yeah. I mean, this is the Hoiberg offense that we thought we'd see. Because Mast is that guy that's, you know, I mean, they list him at 6'10". He might not be that tall, but he's tall enough to play post and be a five. But when he brings the ball up and he hits from outside, that's a five out offense. And that is very hard to defend for most traditional, you know, post players. So then the opposing coach has decisions to make on how you're going to defend Rink Mast, because you can put a smaller guy on him and defend him outside. He's going to take you down low. He's a really good passer too. So it's, you know, he's taken the Derek Walker position and actually even took it to the next level because he shoots the outside shot better than Derek ever did. But he's also a darn good passer. So,
well, he's very much a traditional like European basketball player now,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
You know, you got these guys that are 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", 7 foot. And every single one of them can shoot from anywhere on the court.
Yeah, from face up. Yeah.
Yeah. And you also don't want to get tangled with them under the hoop. It doesn't matter how big you are, because those guys are just hardcore. I mean, it's a lot like Joker, you know, for the Nuggets. It's like, they don't look like your stereotypical basketball players of what we're used to. But you also, you know, I wouldn't want to like meet them in a dark alley after midnight on a Friday night either. So,
you know, Boomer, a side note a little bit on Sam Hoiberg. I was just thinking about this. Honky might be able to join us later. So folks, if you're waiting to get a Honky sighting, he might show up, but I can't promise it. But he would tell us that there's a lot of value in Sam Hoiberg, being a walk-on, because as his dad is a university employee, I believe he gets a greatly discounted, maybe free tuition, if I'm not mistaken, at UNL, right? So Sam Hoiberg essentially gets free tuition. And you know, I mean, that works out perfect. I mean,
it's like an extra scholarship anyway. Player.
It's an extra scholarship. Essentially, maybe that's what we need more family members on the roster.
You know, who else in the Big Ten has had, I think, three of his sons play on his teams, and one's on his current roster right now in the Big Ten?
Oh, man.
That's a good question.
I do know. And now all of a sudden, thanks, Dave, for stumping me there.
Fran McCaffrey.
Yes.
So McCaffrey boys have been on Iowa for the last feels like decade.
And then they're going to be offensive coordinator on the football team soon enough. You know,
and they're on scholarship. I do not understand that. Why would you, especially how much you're making?
Well, Iowa's not known for paying their coaches well. So, you know.
Brandon's got like a ridiculous contract with a ridiculous length to it because Dave Barta gave him everything he wanted because he wanted.
Maybe they gambled away their scholar. Maybe they gambled away their money or something.
I just think logically you want someone like Sam Hoiberg, the coach's son, to you're getting that type of production from someone who's not on scholarship is just great. I just think it's funny. That's all. Well, one other thing I wanted to bring up, guys, with basketball, before we get to Danny Nee a little bit, is the Big Ten grind, right? And we've got Maryland coming up, and it's on the road, and Maryland is not great, but they're not bad. Probably kind of similar to from a profile to Rutgers, really, I suppose. And, you know, it's another chance to get one of those road victories. I was looking at the – and this is prompted by a lot of frustration, not only from this group on this show and Honky and others on our text thread, but generally the Nebraska basketball fandom, because we're frustrated because we haven't had a lot of success. But it's difficult to go and lose to Rutgers in overtime when you feel like you should have got one. It's difficult to lose to Minnesota when you just played so poorly in that second half. Iowa, I don't even talk about that loss. But in reality, road victories in the Big Ten come far and few between, right? I mean, there is 14 teams in the Big Ten. Only one of them has a above 500 on the road this year, and that is number two ranked Purdue, right? Mm-hmm. Wisconsin, who's playing lights out right now, is 3-3 on the road, and in Illinois. And those are it, right? And those are the three teams ahead of Nebraska in the standings, right? You can look at records there like, you know, Penn State and Rutgers, zero wins. Ohio State has not won a road game since January of 23.
That's insane.
It's over a full calendar year, 13 losses in a row. And so you look at Nebraska's there, and sure, we're 0-4 in conference, but we do have a road victory away at K-State, right? Which is actually like a quad one win, depending if you're looking at net or RPI. There's very few quad one road wins, right? So I'm not saying I don't want to see another road win. I just understand it's hard to do. I think maybe some of that's how the Big Ten sets up their scheduling. I don't know. I mean, like you get, you know, these kind of 2 days off and then you head right back out. Or even if you do get longer, they don't let you practice certain days. It's not just the crowd. I think it's just a lot of other factors that go into that. And Big Ten has really good basketball. So I just wanted to point that out. Boomer, thanks for bringing that up. Other thoughts on road woes, not just for Nebraska, but everyone in the Big Ten.
Yeah, it definitely does seem to be that. I mean, you're right. I mean, it is something we gripe about, and probably unfairly, like you said, Dave. I probably people don't pay enough attention to, you know, other Big Ten programs and when they're playing and seeing them on the road, and everyone does seem to struggle, and it's not an easy thing to do for whatever reason. And you know, I think that was part of the challenge with playing Iowa, you know, so soon after, you know, that big emotional win at Purdue.
Yeah.
And you got to turn around and go to Iowa. It's a tough thing. And then, you know, Rutgers is across the country right after that. You know, it's not always easy to get yourself psyched up for either. So, and that is tough. But that's why you do need to take advantage of the ones you can get. Like this game against Maryland would be huge if you can go get that. And then, you know, then you get Wisconsin at home. And if you can keep that home streak going, you know, those would be huge. I mean, these next four games are a huge chance to really, you know, polish up that resume for Nebraska. You know, you can get that road win in Maryland if you can. You've got shots at ranked Wisconsin and Illinois on the road. Maybe that might be dreaming, but heck, why not? And then, then you're at Northwestern. So there's four chances at really good wins that would do a lot for, you know, for a resume if you're looking to make the tournament. And go ahead, Rob.
Well, I was going to say that one of the things too about this team going on the road and shooting in a gym that you're not, you know, used to, that's harder than a lot of people realize that don't play basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, back when I was in the YMCA leagues, just kidding. but I mean, it's not easy to shoot in a gym that you're not used to being in. Right. And this isn't the NBA where these guys go out and get like, you know, 3-4 hours to just shoot around in there before they actually play the game. And not to mention then, and this is a team that relies on really good shooting from the outside.
Yeah.
I mean,
offense doesn't work.
We're one of the few teams, I think, in the Big Ten where our inside play in the paint depends on shooting well from the outside, right? Like we just don't have that kind of offense. We need to open up the inside of the court by forcing guys to guard our shooters. And shooting on the road is not easy. And, you know, and then not to mention, you know, it's like, people will complain about Big Ten refs, but like you go and you look at the stats after games, you're going to see that, you know, there's usually on road games, with the exception of a lot of Nebraska home games, which I can point out in a minute, it has to do with the fact that the type of offense that we run and is not the kind of offense where it's going to draw how much we shoot the ball from the outside, right? Like, we either need to hit or at least like split the offensive rebounds. You know what I mean? Because otherwise, otherwise, like, those are the games we lose. Like, and, you know, but on the road in the Big Ten, you're going to see, you know, Purdue shooting 17 free throws to R8. It's just going to happen, right? Like, that's just the way it goes on the road in the Big Ten for Nebraska in particular, but for just about every team, really. And it's just, it's just how it is. Now, tonight, surprisingly, we shot the same number of free throws as Ohio State, but we were also the better team and we were scoring. And one of the things that Pavelka pointed out from the beginning is that, don't worry, folks. He said something to the effect of, don't worry, folks. Ohio State is shooting really well right now, but they're too young. They're not going to keep this up, and they're not going to be able to keep up this kind of scoring with Nebraska. And sure enough, he was right.
Yeah, you know, the pace was not set for Ohio State there whatsoever. No. I Rob, a couple things. I think you bring up a good point that we'll want to track as the season goes further, and maybe we can actually be talking about an NCAA tournament game on this show. That would be pretty cool, huh, guys? Is the Big Ten has not done well in the NCAA tournament I shouldn't say that. We often can get a team, maybe two, into a Final Four scenario, but we have not won the national championship in 20 plus years.
Wasn't it Michigan State who won the last one?
Michigan State, yeah, with Mateen Cleaves.
And yeah, was Draymond Green on that team? No, he was. He made it to a Final Four, but it wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. Izzo made the Final Four so many times in a row there. Yeah. It was crazy, right? But some people blame the Big Ten refereeing style, which is, you know, a physical league. It doesn't allow these teams to translate well when they have different refs in the tournament. So, well, that'll be interesting to follow a little bit. I mean, I think the last closing thing on the road wins is the exact reason why the RPI and net value road victories and road games in general more than home games, is because it's the NCAA selection committee is trying to identify teams that can win at a neutral site away from their home, right? And that's why there's so many of those neutral site tournaments now in November and December, because you want to have that on your resume that you can win somewhere besides your home court, because that's what you're going to have to do in March. You're going to have to go to some foreign arena you've never played in possibly before and perform at a high level, right? And so, you know, I don't laugh at that K-State victory that we got in December, guys. I think that's going to be very valuable. K-State's doing well in the Big 12 right now. It's a very good basketball league. They probably won't stay at the top like they are right now, but there could be definitely a resume builder there.
Yeah, and one last point before Honky joins in here is that one of the things that I did see as well is that currently they have Nebraska as, I believe it's a 10 or 11 seed in
the bracket. Matrix has us as a 10 seed.
That's yeah, 10 seed, but right, but you know where our first game would be played? Omaha.
I doubt they do that. They'd be so kind of them.
How beautiful would that be, though? I mean, that would be amazing.
Kansas will be there too. But
yeah, the last Big Ten championship, you said like 14 years, Dave. It was 2000. That was 24 years ago.
I said 20 some years.
Oh, did you say 20? Yeah, it's 24 years. It's
unless
been.
You count Maryland the year after that they were in the ACC when that.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'm sure they'll put it on the Big Ten Network. You know,
on the Big Ten website. How's that,
Honky? So, did you get a chance to catch the victory tonight?
Yeah, I watched it over at Mac's house, and it was quite the win. Pretty great second half there, and apparently it's the house of rank, because that guy was on fire tonight.
Yeah, 34-10, 6-8, did it inside, outside, and everywhere in between. Really, I mean, it was fun to watch, and you know, hopefully we get a few more of those. But it's nice to see that we can get that type of, well, maybe not that exact performance. So we have some pretty big time performances by different folks, right? Whether it's Casey, Rank, Welcher, etc.
Yeah, Casey tonight doesn't have a big night really at all. Mm-hmm. You know, Williams goes out and does what he does, which is what, seven rebounds, like four assists, 15, whatever.
A quiet 15. You barely remember he's out there sometimes.
Welcher scores the points that he does, and then, you know, Rank goes off. But what I love about Husker Nation, Husker fans, and this is what gives me hope with football. I can sit there right now and say we're gonna play in the college football championship next year, and people will say, shut up, Bull, you know, whatever, just drinking the Kool-Aid. And all it takes is a couple wins in the season, and people's expectations go through the roof. We are 15 and five. We're 15-5 right now for the first time since the great 1990 season.
Yeah,
and you go on social media, and there's still fans. They're like, but man, we lost our Rutgers. But man, we lost this game. It's like we're 15-5, and. Mm-hmm. What I will just say is that there's a Jekyll and Hyde of home and away that we got to figure out a way to get over. We can't play at Maryland the way that we've played on the road some of the other games. We've got to find ways to win some of these. But from an expectation standpoint, we're 15-5, and nobody coming into the mm-hmm. season was expecting that. So, you know, enjoy that. And when we play at home, we seem to have everyone's number. We beat them by 15, 16 points.
I don't know if you caught it, Honky, if you were listening to the show at all on your way coming in, but Dave made a really good point in the last show, and then we kind of emphasized it this evening, was that there are only three teams in the Big Ten that are 500 or better right now on the road, and all three of them are the three teams that are ahead of Nebraska in the standings. So winning on the road in the Big Ten is not easy, and that's me quoting Dave, okay? Write it down, people. Yeah. All right.
For me, it's not even about if it's easy to win on the road. Like, we haven't played well on the road. And that's
I agree with that.
Or there's that Jekyll Hyde end game, like to go to Iowa and be down 17-2 before you know it. But then to come all the way back and even take a lead with about 10 minutes left in the game and then completely, you know, just kind of poop it down the leg, so to speak. But again, I'm also complaining about a 15-5 team right now, which is an amazing thing to be complaining about.
Like, Nebraska for you.
What a great place as a Husker fan to be complaining right now is that we are only 15-5. When, I mean, guys, everyone, give each other a round of applause. We're part of a podcast that has just seen abysmal basketball for season after season, and we're sitting here not just talking about can we get into the tournament, but legitimately, like, what kind of. We can start to have a seeding discussion, win a game or two. How do we do in these next four games? If you split them and go 2-2 and you beat a Illinois.
Let's talk about that.
Wisconsin.
Honk. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's where we're heading, actually. So let's see. You have Maryland on the road and then Wisconsin at home.
Yep.
And then.
At Illinois, at Northwestern.
At Northwestern.
And then, boy, so you got a really nice home game there that you hopefully can redeem yourself versus Wisconsin. But, three road games, And I think, you know, if you somehow can go 2-2 in this stretch, that would really set you up because the schedule does get a little bit easier at the back end, right?
And this is the tough road to hoe right here. This last
and I mean, Illinois on the road, holy cow, that's going to be tough. I think Purdue has a couple of good road wins, right? But it's like we have a road win versus K-State. That's right when you're joining. We were talking about that. Mm. We should not minimize that victory at this present moment because that's probably looking like a quad one or at minimum a quad two road win. And there's very few teams with that on their resume. I mean, like, you just don't have it, right? And so if we can get a Maryland or a Northwestern road win, for goodness sakes, that's amazing. I'd happy to take some of the lesser road wins because any road win will look good. Right. But if you beat another quality team like K-State on the road, now you've got two to your point on seeding that makes a world of difference for the selection committee. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, kind of on that note, you know, we're 15-5, like you said, there's 11 games left. I mean, how many do you think you have to win to be comfortable, you know, not only making the tournament, but getting a decent seed, not being on that play-in game? I mean, where do you draw the line at that?
Yeah, we're 5-4. There's 11 games left.
Yeah. You got to win five of them to go 500. in conference.
Yeah, yeah. I think if you defend your home court and go 500, you're going to be in. I think if you win six, then you're really starting to really move up a seeding ladder, and then you still have opportunity to get a few more wins at the neutral site Big Ten tourney. So, you know, I think you got to look at defending the home court. Wisconsin's going to be tough, but if you can do that there, and still one or two road games.
Yeah, and I think that is something to keep in mind, you know, because I think in a lot of Nebraska ball fans' memories is, you know, the team a few years ago that went, you know, had 22 wins and didn't make the tournament.
Went 13-5 in conference.
Yeah, and, you know, that was, as we all knew, was a down year in the Big Ten. But that team, I mean, how many quad one or two wins did that team have? It was not many.
Two, maybe? It had one. It beat Michigan. And it came 1 point away from beating Kansas.
Yeah, that Kansas loss was probably the clincher that kept him out. You know, the fact that he didn't have a resume of anything. It was just, a lot of empty calories, so to speak, for that.
Yeah, that's not the case this year.
No,
this is a better team. This team would beat that team by 20.
That you could point to and say, hey, this is good. So, you know, if they get 22, I'd have no, you know, reservations at all about them making the tournament. You know, if they get six or seven wins, that's comfortable. Even five, you know, they should still be in, but.
So they get to 20 wins, I think they're looking pretty good.
Speak one or two of those road wins out and just leave no doubt and just make it easy.
Yeah. I like the depth of what this team is starting to show. Like Eli Rice starting to play as much as he had the last two or three games. That's your number nine guy now. Kata today was actually listed on the questionable chart, for the first time. Didn't play, but was at least listed, meaning that my thought all along with Kata was if he can play anytime – by, you know, like by February, if we could get him six, 7 games of play time. And again, all this guy needs to do is play 5 minutes a game so that you can take rank out for a few minutes and give him a little bit of a blow there. And then to do what they've done the last two games with Gary out is impressive. Different guys keep stepping up. That feels better than some of the teams that we've had that have been close to making the tournament or making it, even the 2013. Sure. I mean, that was Petaway was amazing
on fire.
And you had Shields and you had Pitchford, but it just wasn't.
It was usually like three guys, right? Yeah, same thing with.
This team just feels like they're so. Think about the team, the 2000, Miles's team when Copeland went down and we were like 11-2. Copeland goes down and the team just went in the tank. Here we lose Gary and we've won the two games. We had Rank out for a couple of games. I know they were against crappy competition, but he goes out for a couple of games after the knee thing and the team just keeps stepping up. So it feels different than even the past teams that have been flirting with the tournament.
Yeah. Well, Honky, we've been talking basketball for almost half an hour, so that's pretty impressive. Yeah. But we did want to maybe touch on Danny Knee since we had the big kind of like halftime celebration of Nebraska ball, and we did call our initial basketball segment Nebraska ball. And this is the best start to a season since the 90-91 team, right? So I just thought I'd put it on the run list to have some fond memories down Danny Knee way. So Honky, what are some of the things that stand out to you about that?
Well, I wish I could have been there. Yeah, I wish I could have been there Friday night at Barry's because I guess they went to Barry's and that was a very traditional stopping point for Knee. And I mean, just that was a time of when basketball, I mean, it was really fun, you know, watching the old Raycon. Oh, the Big Eight Raycom games and the opponents, the other coaches, Norm Stewart and Johnny Orr and Billy Tubbs and all that. And what was so great about Knee was that, you know, he wasn't going to take a second billing to any one of those guys. I mean, those are huge characters on the basketball court, and Knee could step on the court with any one of them and outshine them, outperform them, so to speak. And so it was fun to see him back there, and I'm glad that he had a chance to be welcome back to PBA and congratulate. And the success that he had, I mean, to just put it in perspective, we've been to 7 stinking NCAA tournaments in our entire life, and 5 of them happened under his watch within seven or eight years. And one of the years we don't make it, we win the NIT. And we win the only conference championship, at least that we've ever won in our lifetime. I don't know if we ever won a conference title during Cipriano or any of those other years. But
at least we did. Right?
We did against with our greatest basketball coach, Jumbo Steve, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, he was a three-time conference winner.
Never lost in conference there those 3 years. Exactly. It looks like. Yeah.
But
I just set you up for that.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, Honky. I mean, Danny Nee was a character just perfect for that time. Like you said, I mean, post-game, he'd be at Barry's. I mean, how often do you see coaches just, you know, plumbing around there, you know, down in the downtown bar scene anymore like you did? And, you know, and one of the memories, you know, I had of it was, what year was it we won the Big 8 tournament? Was it
94.
Yeah. 94. I just, you know, you mentioned Norm Stewart, and I just remember him and Norm Stewart kind of getting into it at half court at halftime, and they think he was even like poking him in the chest and everything like that. And that was I don't think those guys liked each other. Yeah. That's just my opinion. I don't think there was any love loss, and I don't think that was an act, but there were some definitely harsh feelings between those two. And that was kind of the fun of Danny Nee. He was not your prototypical, you know, Nebraska guy. He was, he was from the
Bronx, for goodness sake.
Yeah. He was very, you know, very vocal, very, you know, not Nebraska nice. I would say that. You know, that probably why I get along with the Vannies so well, I think, too. I think they had no trouble, you know, getting berries by themselves. They had a few drinks, too. I think that was a big part of it. But
And a very similar trajectory to what Hoiberg potentially is going through right now. You know, short of the first year, his first season taking over a team that had just been to the NCAA tournament, our first ever one in 85, Nee does take us to the Final Four of the NIT his first season. But once that season got through, the next 3 years were bad, bad. I mean, we were losing records, and there was a lot of pressure. And after year four, we should probably fire him. But Devaney showed some restraint and left, let him come back with this senior-laden team of Bo Reed and Clifford Scales and Rich King, make a couple, changes, bring in Tony Farmer from a junior college ranks, I think it was, and all of a sudden, you hit magic in a bottle. And I think we all look at Fred this year the exact same way, like coming into the season, like you need to show market improvement, whatever that looked like. I don't know that we thought it'd be 15-5 and everything the way it is, but he needed to show something like this. And now we've gotten to the point where an NIT, you know, team this year would feel really disappointing this deep into the season. Like, and I know that would be something we haven't done under him, and it would be progress, but I mean, I'm not trying to sell progress. Like, we want wins. And this fan base deserves wins. And so things like tonight and going out there and performing well down the stretch with this season or with this team, I think that's huge. And my gosh, I'm ecstatic right now with where we're at. Even as frustrated as I've been with some individual performances here or there, my gosh, I mean, what am I complaining about? We're 15-5.
Yep, that's right.
This is all the right, most logical good. I think I've ever seen you.
Hey, Rob, do you know who Danny Nee played with in high school on the same high school basketball team? I know.
Oh, my God. Is this – Honky, I'll let you answer it.
This was
Power name Memorial school? Academy, I believe.
Was do you know it, Rob?
I do not.
Mr. Lou Alcindor.
He was a pilot for airlines.
He was, I was gonna say, wasn't that the guy? Have you ever seen a grown man naked? That guy?
He was his co-pilot.
Listen, kid.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Like you tell your dad. Oh man,
pretty amazing. Nee just was an absolute character. Also, Rob, maybe a connection that you would know. Is that Danny Nee had his personal tie collection that they sold at Gary Michaels Clothiers.
Oh, yes, I do know.
All the suits were done by Gary Michaels.
Oh, speaking of suits, did you notice Hoiberg tonight looking good?
Yeah, like, I did.
What was up with that?
So it was a game there. God, they talked about it in the post game on the radio, and I was distracted in the gym. I won't say with what, but
that's great podcasting, Rob. Thanks.
Yeah, it was some kind of like a charity fundraiser type thing, or some kind of a tribute to something.
All right, we'll call that good. Thanks, Rob.
No,
sorry.
But did you know, Dave? Did you know?
No, but when you don't know, then you shut your mouth up.
But you asked me. I don't know.
Yeah. No, they didn't ask you. It was just a conversation point. All right. Honk, Boomer, Rob, I know you want to talk about football, right? And you have plenty of important insights on football. Let's put on our scarlet colored glasses and talk a little bit about our own internal coaching carousel. And we do now have a dedicated quarterback coach and co-offensive coordinator and Glenn Thomas. I'm not breaking any news here. Came out last week, and he was definitely a name that was on many people's lists. Was with the Steelers until they lost in the playoffs. Honky, I mean, just in general, you think this is obviously the right move to add a quarterback's coach?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is what Rhule wanted from day one. Yep. When they announced the $7.5 million budget for their assistant coaching staff a year ago, that only made sense if you had a high price QB coach, probably. And a year ago, it would have been Pete's was all the talk.
Yep.
And we also thought probably Mickey Joseph would have been part of that, and that would have, you know, rounded the numbers up to that amount. Now, they never hit that amount. They were, I think, just below $6 million, if I remember correctly. If all my math is right, you know, during the season last year. So in the back of my mind, I'm kind of thinking they kind of have that number knowing we can spend roughly that much this year at least. And they went out and Tony White, they go and raise him up from 1 million to 1.6 to keep him. Good move. Retention of a coach who's already done something here. But the biggest issue on that entire team last year from start to finish was the quarterback play. I think that the co-coordinator thing intrigues me because I'm curious how they're going to do that together. And I know that they want that Satterfield wants to be up in the box, and he didn't feel like he could be up there in the box last year, at least the first, you know, 3/4 of the season. And he probably wasn't wrong. I mean, he looked at his quarterback situation. I need to be down there with those guys, but that, again, that just takes him away from being able to do the other things you need to do as an offensive coordinator. So now you have somebody dedicated to do it. He can – Satterfield can go back to coaching tight ends, which is what I think they wanted him to do in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all yeah. well.
And, you know, Glenn Thomas, Rob, actually has a maybe longer track record with Matt Rhule than Satterfield, actually, right? I mean, Satterfield was, to Honky's point, I think the tight ends coach when Glenn Thomas was the co-OC at Baylor with Jeff Nixon or something. I might get my names wrong, but I think that's about right. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think Glenn Thomas definitely could have been in the OC last year, the hire, right? You know, yeah. So I think maybe having Thomas and Satterfield is what that kind of dueling minds, I guess, might actually make the offense a little bit more dynamic and a little less predictable. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he was with him, what, in Temple back in 2015, yeah. yep. right? And then Baylor. And then, you know, he's been a couple different places. And it's always interesting to see these guys. Like, he was an offensive assistant with the Steelers. And, I mean, that kind of worried me a little bit when I heard that because their offense was terrible this year. But, I mean, you know, I'm not quite sure what he was doing there. But when he came in as the co-offensive coordinator, it just got me thinking, like, is that something that they are basically trying to tell Sat, like, hey, look, you know, you can be
replaced? No, I think they wanted to almost do that from the get-go. That's my take, Rob. Is like Honky's saying, like, Jake Peets was going to get $1 million last year, but then should be the quarterback's coach. He was at least going to be the passing game coordinator, if not a co-OC for that money. So I think that scheme of having co-OCs, which Rhule has a track record of doing it, was probably the actual initial thought.
How does that work with play calling? That's what I want to know. Like, is Sack going to be play calling, or like, do they just both kind of work out the game plan, or if something's not working, do they like switch headsets? Like, how does that work? I mean, I'm genuinely asking, like, at this point, like, when you're a co-host.
I'll let Honky answer.
I understand, honestly, the co part less than I would a passing and run game. Like, at least, you know, for instance, Raiola, I don't know if they've announced it or anything, but at least I've heard talk that Raiola, part of his raise to $500,000 isn't just to be an offensive line coach, but that he'd also have some kind of run game coordinator tied into it, which is what Greg Austin had, I think, as well back in the day. That actually makes sense from a schematic standpoint. If it's like, okay, I'm the run game coordinator, I'm the pass game coordinator, we both are designing certain parts of the game, I'm like, okay, I can buy that. Co-coordinators, I'm not exactly sure how that works from, you know, from a game, from game planning to game calling, you know, that, I mean, sometimes you can have, you know, so many cooks in the kitchen. So I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure how they are defining the difference between the two, but
like, do they share headphones? Like couples do with it.
They don't make up
where they're listening to the same playlist or something.
I would assume, like, that's something you got to spell out pretty clearly.
Yeah.
This person's calling
the Sack going to be up in the booth and one guy down on the field.
I
would also imagine some of this is just, you know, you call him co-offensive coordinator because that'll let you pay him more based on, you know, scales and things you have. So I think there's a lot of it to that. Because how does that impact like a coaching counts? You know, because you only have X number of coaches officially. Does that
it doesn't change
on that? I was always curious on that too. I don't know if it has any impact, but
yeah. No, it doesn't. Josh Martin was the tight ends coach last year when he took over for Bob Wager, but it was a temporary year contract. And then once the season got done, they just moved him back to being a analyst like he was before. Mm-hmm. And so essentially Glenn Thomas is taking over Josh Martin's open position on the staff. That's how, and then they just move people around a little bit. But, you know, I tend to agree with what you're saying here, Boomer. I think what you have is you have a coordinator that's up in the box. He's going to be calling plays. And now we have a quarterback coach who can be on the sideline. He can be in direct contact with him, but he's going to be on the sideline. And when that quarterback comes off the field, now you've got somebody talking with him right there, doing all the things that Sat was having to do last year on the sideline too. It just, you know, I think it splits up the duties better. And I know that's what Rule wanted to do from day one. It's unfortunate in so many ways that we couldn't make this happen a year ago. I know Thomas would have been available a year ago. I've heard people ask why didn't they just get Thomas when they didn't get Pete's and just get Thomas instead. And I don't know. I don't know the answers to that, but they got them now. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And to your point of what you're calling a coach, et cetera. I mean, I think where we get a little confused and hung up on the co-offensive coordinator is someone has to be the play caller, right? So co-offensive coordinator to me makes sense. You might be able to, in the off season and during the week, be designing plays and working through different schemes, et cetera. You still need one play caller. It just gets way too complicated if you don't. Right. So I think Satterfield's the play caller. Right. And then you have two offense coordinators that's trying to meld a similar philosophy together. I was in one of those, Wikipedia, death spirals where you start looking at random stuff. And somehow I got onto the coaching bio of Norm Chow. Remember Norm Chow?
I do.
Oh gosh, yeah, BYU guy. And
He coached at the Chargers. He was a Chargers offensive coordinator for a little while too.
When he was at BYU, where he kind of made his name, what position coach? What coaching title did he have?
Oh, geez.
Think he does?
Now I think it's probably something really, really weird. Was he offensive line coach or something?
He was only the OC the last three or four years he was there. But I was reading his Wikipedia page, and Lavelle Edwards designated him as the play caller as wide receivers coach in 1982. He was a play caller for 20 years at BYU, but he was only the OC for the last four or five years. Right. So what a play caller is compared to what else is he doing? I mean, I just thought it was fascinating. Right. So
think about Osborne, until he hired Gill in 92, Osborne was the quarterback's coach, the offensive coordinator, and the head coach.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was just how it was, mm-hmm. And he finally, let that one duty go by hiring Gill. But I mean, how rare do you see a coordinator and head coach? And he had the position title on top of it too. And I don't know, you find out whatever works. I think last year I heard there were times where even Rule got involved with some of the play calling. And I don't know if that was just, as the head coach stepping in.
Fourth and shorts or end zone, end of the game, you're the coach knows what he wants to run. He's like, hey, Sat, run this. I mean, I don't think that's too.
No, I think that's part of the coordination that they have amongst the staff. And so to that point, could Glenn Thomas, even if he's not labeled as the play caller, could he still make some play calls? Sure. I mean, one of the famous play calls in Husker football history is that Black Flash 41 reverse. And that was, that was he's the head coach now at Ohio. He was a grad assistant at the time.
Oh, Tim Albin.
Tim Albin. He was a grad assistant, and supposedly he was the one that was kind of behind making that call. So, I mean, Tenneper would be up in the box and would throw down all kinds of suggestions and essentially make the play call, but Osborne would be the one to pull the trigger on the call. So it's however they coordinate it together. Have Thomas and Sat worked together before? Have they ever
ended
up? Okay.
Yeah, I don't think they've ever been co-OCs, but at Baylor for 2 years they were together, and they were, 1 year at Temple.
I was going to say, they were in 2017 through 2019. Thomas was the co-offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach at Baylor. So, I mean, if Satt was an offensive coordinator there, then they would have been co-offensive coordinators at that point.
Satterfield was like the tight ends coach at
Baylor. He was tight ends coach. Okay. Well, I'm just saying that's what his Thomas's position or title was that.
Yeah. So yeah, they've worked together. And so yeah, I think that's positive, right?
So how do we feel about, like, it seems like Rule is now kind of hiring a lot of his buddies, right? Where in the past, thing for, you know, Husker fans in general, like, you know, hiring all of your buddies to come and coach, right? I mean, didn't we go through this kind of with Frost? Like, are we seeing kind of the same kind of reaction from people out there about this? Like, on are people talking about that? I don't see much of it.
I've seen on social media some people complain about that or at least take issue with that. I don't know. I mean, as long as your friends do a good job, I don't really care, right? Yeah. It's don't hire your bad friends that suck at their jobs. I mean, that's
like when you guys hired me for the podcast, right?
Oh, we're not
paying
you, Rob. So,
to Dave's point there, when your buddy, if he's struggling, you know, I've never been a fire coach guy. I've never been like, get that guy out of here. You know, the first bad play he calls, fire him. No, not that. But like, look, if someone's clearly struggling or someone's not a good fit here, there's also a point of like not just keeping people around too because they're your buddies. I mean, there's a balance there. But look, I mean, these are good coaches. I mean, Glenn Thomas has more than a worthy record resume. I mean, these guys have had the resumes. This is different than Frost, where the entire staff came up and there was kind of a question of, does this staff have the makings of a Power Five staff? Because they just haven't done it. They did great things at UCF, but these are young guys or guys that haven't done it at this level. I mean, it's hard to look at Rule staff and say these guys can't do it at this level. They've all been, you know, a lot of them have had a lot of success at it. And
some of the ones with biggest question mark, I mean, like Terrence Knighton, and he's quickly proved himself. I think Garrett McGuire hopefully will start showing that here next year.
Tony White's living up to everything that we thought, and they are willing to put the resources in to retain great coaches that could have gone somewhere else. Rayola, I think, is showing very well as a position coach on the line, not just as a uncle of a talented quarterback, but I mean, as somebody that look at that offensive line, the development that's going on there. Look at him going into Hawaii and pulling out the number one recruit who's an offensive lineman. Look at him getting, you know, this, you know, we're getting the kid from Florida, Mazkow, to come in there. You know, he's done, while we're not just having mass defections.
Makuza, I believe, Hank. It's Makuza.
McGuire or Mac was saying Mazkow all night, so I was just like,
Makuza.
Mazkow.
Is that really? M-A-Z-Z-C-C-U-A is
C-U-A.
C-U-A.
Mazkua.
Mazkow?
How do you get Mazkow out of that? I have no idea.
I don't know. I mean, I call him. I call him Hash Nutmacher for 3 years. I mean, that's how you get that. Mazkua.
Oh, classic.
Mazkua. That sounds like a drink. Like, Boomer, that's a.
It's pronounced Beatrice, not Beatrice.
Yeah, we'll have to make something up for
Beatrice.
That.
Beatrice.
The Mazkua. So, yeah.
And we're going off script here, but I know Honky joined the show, and, you know, we can always have fun. You know, I think we're going after another like 4-star DN that randomly was visiting this weekend, and Mazkua, if that is correct, seems to be a potential just a walk on with an NIL deal. Do you feel like the years of actually understanding the 85 and who's actually on scholarship or not is over? Because it feels like we're going to have 100 guys worth scholarships.
It just doesn't matter anymore.
It doesn't matter.
I think I mentioned on the show last week was the one where IGC last year. We still don't. I'm not sure if he was on scholarship or not. But it was reading Sean Callahan was talking about him, and Callahan's like, "Yeah, we don't have verification. We didn't know, and maybe they know now. I don't know." But it was like the point is during the season, it was like, "Oh, we're not sure," and it just really doesn't matter at this point. Mm-hmm. The only thing that
Maybe the only thing that matters, parents are being hired by the university, and so the kids are getting free tuition.
I mean,
sorry, you missed that.
Talk about, so, well, that's an inside joke, Honky. We'll get back to that one, but keep finish your thought.
Well, the only thing that matters, I guess, in terms of the numbers, is that they still will apply towards like Title IX numbers and everything, and which, as we found out with like walk-ons and stuff, still have an effect on your Title IX. And so when we were at 150 and 155 on the team, that was, you know, that creates certain imbalances that you have to correct. So I know that they want it to be like closer probably to 125, 130, but how those 130 are made up, I mean, you're going to have 85 scholarship guys. And if you have 40 or 45 walk-ons, if 10 of those walk-ons or 15 of those walk-ons or 20 of them are NIL, then they are.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It is such a different way to look at it. I don't dislike the system. I mean, we stand to benefit as much as anyone from it.
Absolutely.
We do. So if we can get kids in here that would have gone somewhere else on scholarship, then more power to us. And, you know, I don't know that we'll ever have Ohio State's quarterback room, but good luck keeping all those guys happy.
Yeah, that's the truth. That's the truth. All right, good stuff. Good stuff. The tuition joke, Honky, was Sam Hoiberg is a walk on, and it's like he's like a free scholarship because he gets free tuition because Fred's dad. And I was like, well, Honky would know all about that. And made the point that Iowa, Fran McCaffrey, has had three of his sons on his team, but he gives them scholarships for what reason? I do not know.
Maybe Iowa's Iowa. Maybe they don't provide. They don't want their kids educated, so they don't provide employees. You know, because
still makes $5 million a year, Rob.
Even McDermott at Creighton, I think he was on scholarship like the first 3 years, and then when he came back and was the player of the year. That year, he took himself off scholarship, if I remember right. He basically created an extra spot because they knew they would have a special team, and every spot was important. But, yeah, you look at Sam Hoiberg out there, and at the very least, you wouldn't notice the difference between walk-on or scholarship with him. And that's really – ideally, that's what the walk-on program, when it's at its best, it provides the right kind of depth. He's not a starter on the basketball team. We have a lot of – walk-ons on the football team that aren't starters, but that are guys that play meaningful minutes and fill in the roles. And when guys get injured, they step up. And that's what Osborne always intended to use out of it. And then the side benefit of just getting so many more kids involved from around this area. I was just reading one today, a Norfolk High kid that just committed recently. And I mean, you're seeing it with the walk-ons of kids from all across the state. It's just bringing them back into the fold, bringing those communities back in the fold that maybe haven't had a guy there in a while. So I think Rule's done a great job. We just need the wins. I mean, Rule has done a great job managing that. For the fan out there that wants the big five-star kids, Rule has gone out there and managed to pull that off. Rule has managed to do a lot of the things that, you know, he's kept old school guys like me happy with physical practices and, you know, at least talk of fullbacks and stuff. I mean, he's hitting on all the right things. We just got to get some wins to come along with it, but he's doing it right.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I thought I had on the show that we want to talk about really quick is one of those recruits from one of the local Nebraska spots, Honolulu, Nebraska.
And it's natural.
Yeah, exactly. Well, an Alliance Nebraska kid was out in Honolulu as well with Dylan Raiola. Carter Nelson, Dylan connected a couple different times in the Polynesian Bowl. Honky, did you at least check out any of the highlights?
Oh, I watched the whole thing. He was the leading receiver in the game and did the hookah at the beginning.
It was quite the setting with the field. It was like elevated on a mesa and overlooking the harbor and whatnot.
Gosh, I'm going to say this and then I'm going to completely need it double checked, but I think that's where Hawaii is playing now. Is at that field? Because they're not playing at the Aloha Bowl.
No, they've got a local on-campus stadium that holds like 9,000. Okay. I watch way too many Hawaii home games late at night.
Okay, so it wasn't that field, but okay. I knew they had moved closer to the you area. But anyways, yeah, a couple things with Nelson was that he held up well. And I'm not a big guy with all these like all-star games for the most part. I mean, it's, you know, it's
a game more for show.
In Carter's case, he really benefits two ways from it, is that he got to play against some real high level talent when you're coming from, you know, the Ainsworth area. And the secondary thing of like, this was, he played in two different all-American games. It's mm-hmm. his first time playing 11-man football. And so the very basics of that transition were nice, but you know, he caught the nice seam route down the middle there from Dylan. And then they even did a little option side pass to him and he caught it and went 10 yards and showed some real nice speed and durability on it. So,
excited. You know, I thought of it was because, Carter Nelson as a key cog, the Alliance, you know, sports machine, is playing basketball and maybe track. I don't know. So he's not enrolling early, right? He's not in Lincoln, but he got a full week of practice with Dylan Raiola. I thought that was super valuable because trying to build that chemistry to actually kind of have that connection with his quarterback of the future. And is at 6'4", 220. I mean, if he's going to see the field next year, it may not be at the tight end position. You know, maybe he can be kind of one of those positionless receivers. And having that time with Dylan couldn't have hurt, that's for certain.
Mm-hmm. And having Fedoni come back, having Borkercher coming back, there's not that pressure on this big-time recruit. I mean, top 100 recruit. There's not this pressure that he needs to step in and be an immediate guy. But if he can – if he steps in, he's that good, though, I'm sure they'll find a way to get him on the field. And if nothing else, at least you have the 4-game redshirt rule, if that's what it is with them. But, the whole week, you saw photos of them together. They, of course, were on the same team. Preston Taumau, the other Husker recruit, the offensive lineman, he was on the other team. But there's photos of them all together. So I think that's a good thing to get some of that camaraderie.
Boomer, can we do a pronunciation check on Preston Taumau?
Please do. Taumua. Taumua.
Taumua.
Mazuka.
Yeah.
It's another UA.
There's Mazuka. Maybe I listened to his own recording on the Florida Gators page.
I like Bazooka. Just think of Bazooka.
Honk. Wait, is it Mazuka, not Mazuka?
Yeah, Micah Mazuka is how he said his own name according to the Florida Gators.
Dave, it's not Mazkua.
Yes, or Mazcow.
Well, at least I was closer. I don't know how Mazcow.
I don't know Mazcow or Mazuka. I don't know. But yeah, so I'm sure it's Preston to Mazuka or something. But he looked good out there too. He looks like a run greater guy that's gonna fit in well with what not just Rule wants to do, but with how Raiola coaches. I think that's gonna be a good match. So, excited to see it this week on campus. I think it was it 27 new people are on campus between transfers and incoming freshmen. So, it started a week ago already now. And then, yesterday, Monday was the start of the semester. So they're out there, they're doing all the drills now, the mat drills and all that. I'm sure we'll be seeing Taumua. Preston Taumua. All right. But I'm sure we'll be seeing all the social media videos coming out. One social media video that did come out from a recruit a week ago, and they just showed like a 3-second clip of the new weight room. So there's weights and stuff in there, but they haven't really moved at least we haven't seen any videos of guys working out in it yet, but you can tell that they're getting really close to opening that up. So, you know, that's $150-160 million of facilities that are, you know, some of them are already open. The other ones are starting to open over the course of these months, and they're starting to play a role now in the recruitment of guys. So hopefully we get some positive returns out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Rob.
So going back a little bit, I think that field that they play the Polynesian Bowl at is actually a high school stadium.
It is a high school stadium.
Yeah, it is. It's on the Kamehameha. It's the Kamehameha Kapalama campus. Did I say that right? Kamehameha.
Boomer, can you look that pronunciation?
Yeah, that's the famous Hawaiian.
Yeah, I believe it's called the Kunuakea Stadium.
There we go. Thank you, Rob.
Yes. Yeah. So wow. I looked that up and I wanted to see, because I was wondering what, because I wanted to see what it was, but it's a high school stadium. It's a private school.
Yeah. Anyway. All right, guys. Anything else that we want to chat about? Rob, is there any other tidbits you want, Boomer?
Do you really want to hear more from me, Dave?
No, I do not.
Good. Good.
All right. Let's get to our parting shots. And you know what, Rob? I do want to hear from you. Let's get a parting shot from Redcast Rob.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I have missed all you guys, and I'm looking forward to the upcoming, NCAA tournament berth of being able to do a show about that for Nebraska ball. I am also looking forward to the spring game, which is just a short, like 2 months, 3 months away now, I believe. I still need to reserve my place to stay out there. I am also looking forward to getting Honky some aloe fiber in Roca, Nebraska. For all that I know, that could be coming down the road very soon for him. And so I am keeping my fingers crossed, and I just keep bringing it up every chance I get to anybody that'll listen, because, you know, that's all I want for him.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed there too. Yeah.
Honky, your beard looks really exceptionally full. I'm really impressed with the beard tonight.
Yeah, really thick. Really, yeah. Good. I know I was telling you guys that I had somebody on campus that saw me, and they started talking to me, and they thought I was the coach.
and we knew it was happening eventually.
I ran into the same person a few days later, and they started talking to me again, and they thought I was the coach again. I had to stop them the second time. I'm not him. I think with the thicker beard, it even maybe looks closer, I guess, for some people. Yeah. I don't know. But, I'm just letting it go. Right now, why not?
Nice. Well, Hawk, what's your parting shot?
Yeah, I really didn't come prepared with anything, so I'll use the old fashioned one that I always do. Redcast Nation has grown to over 30,000 now. We are officially over 30,000, which I think that doesn't move us up in the rankings of cities, but we are still sixth. I guess that'd be Kearney. I think would be next.
Coming after Kearney. Excellent.
Coming after Kearney, and then Grand Island, then Beatrice, then Lincoln, then Omaha. We got ways for some of those. Did I say Beatrice?
Yeah, you Kearney? Did. It's pronounced Beatrice, Rob.
Oh, Bellevue. Beatrice. I'm sorry, Bellevue. Oh. It'd be Kearney, Grand Island, Bellevue, and then Lincoln and Omaha. So, but anyways, we're over 30,000. So, Redcasters, there you go. Thanks for all the people following us and subscribing and all that good stuff. You guys are awesome. Go Big Red.
All right, Boomer. I want a wrestling take here with either Matchup Mocker or WWE. I don't care.
Yeah, we can throw a wrestling take out. It's just kind of interesting news today. You know, I know the other passion of the Redcast is obviously pro wrestling, along with Australian rules football and other things. But it's just kind of an interesting change in that world is how WWE is moving their flagship show Raw to Netflix. And, you know, it's been on USA for, I don't know how long, you know, decades. And that's just kind of an interesting move, just showing how live entertainment is changing. And then in the new environment of, cable cutting and all of that. I mean, granted, they're getting paid $5 billion for it. So
wow.
I can see that happening.
That's insane. Anybody,
but yeah, I mean, we've seen, NFL playoff games on Peacock now.
Yeah, we're going to see a Big Ten game on Netflix, now. Huh?
yeah, you're getting that. What's currently the premier?
Well, at least everybody has Netflix, so yeah, it's not Netflix, like we're here, anyone complaining.
I don't know. I don't know if it's going to work well for them or not, but I don't know if they're going to show commercials during it or if it's just going to be a straight up show or how it's going to work.
That could be different.
I'm curious to see how that works out, but we're probably going to see a lot more of this in terms of just, sports in general, these streaming services.
And then like all the other supporting shows around it, right? They have that one prime show. They're going to have a whole bunch of stuff behind the scenes,
A ton of content they could put out there. They could add, other, prior shows on it, because, that was the one advantage to Peacock, because it had the WWE network on it. You could get a whole bunch of old classic wrestling shows that I've been ODing on over the last few months, watching old Mid-Atlantic stuff and, WCCW things like
that. Fits in perfect. I mean, everything else on Netflix is scripted as well, so.
Yeah, just as well. Might as well be. So, and the NFL might as well be these days, too. So, I mean, let's just.
Oh, God, please.
Ow. I think keep an eye on this for the Big Ten and other sports.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Yeah. Because, it may be coming.
Yeah, if they're going to throw billions of dollars at a conference to put stuff exclusively on, you know, a streaming service, that's going to be hard to pass up. So it would not shock me to see something like this happen in college sports in the near future. So it's just interesting to see.
Yep. Agree. All right, guys. That was a fun show. I enjoyed it. We'll be back, I'm sure, very soon after a couple more Nebraska basketball victories. For now, let's call that another Go Big Redcast.
Go Big Red.
Herd at Sports Network production.